It was savage. It was absolutely savage.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You're listening to Sapnin Podcast.
Sapnin!
Sapnin!
You are listening to episode 222, all the twos, of Sapnin Podcast, featuring myself, Sean Smith, and my good friend, Morgan Richards.
Yes, it's me, Morgan Richards. And give me, like, some in...
Fuck's sake.
Whatever. Cool. Sorry, I've gone scatterbrain a little bit there. But don't worry, because the guest we have on this episode will make you feel...
Why
like
are you still
falling
going?
In love?
Are you done now?
I'm done now. I'm done.
Good. This week's guest is Murray McLeod from the amazing pop, rock, indie, alt, brilliant band, The Excerpts, from up there in the Scotland.
Yes, and The Excerpts are back. They've been quite quiet for a while, but they've returned with a fresh attitude, aesthetic, management label, and appreciation for music from those Scottish songwriting heartthrobs we've all come to know and love. Murray is an old friend of ours, an old friend of the podcast, and The Excerpts are just a band we absolutely adore. They released their comeback single, Gimme, on Unify Records just a couple of weeks ago, launching a new introduction to the band. But on this conversation, I think we have not one, but two massive scoops, two exclusives to share with everyone. Because not only is this one of their first in-depth interviews back since this new chapter, but at the time of recording, I'm pretty sure this is exclusive details, on their next single. They're releasing a track called Ooh. Ache on March 8th. Featuring his best friend, Mr. Sam Carter of Architects.
I hope we don't get in trouble for saying that. Apologies if we do. We talked to him about it during the podcast, and no, there was no resistance from anyone involved in the interview. So please blame Murray, not the producers of Sapnin Podcast, which is me and Morgan. So yes, check out the one we've done prior to this. After listening to this one, obviously you're not mental. But yeah, we had a great, great chat with Murray about the new direction, production, Fight Star having two cooked chickens on tour, influences to songs being shorter and longer. And yeah, we had a great, great chat, and it is always, always fantastic to see or hear from Murray.
Yes, he's someone we love very, very much. Hashtag blame Murray if anything goes wrong. But Ache will be available March 8th. And when this episode comes out, it's available to pre-save already on Spotify and Apple. So make sure to head over to the Excerpts and Unify social media for all the details on that. But throughout this conversation, we're going to get into all sorts, from the direction and mindset they're currently at, to some more new album secrets, going through an identity crisis, some very early learning curves, how Murray originally started as a drummer, polarizing online comments, the weirdest gig they've gotten paid not to do, and I even ask a question about one of my favorite songs of theirs called Aberdeen 1987, taken from their first record. And after we recorded this, I think that question played on his mind so much. I saw Murray tweeting about it online. So I'm making everyone think a little bit too hard, maybe, with these questions. But before we go into the conversation, a reminder, as always, to give us a follow at SappeningPod on Twitter and Instagram. And if you'd like to support us doing this and every week, please head over to our Patreon page, patreon.com/Sappening. Not only is that the best way to help, but you get included into a wonderful community of people to just hang out and become your new best friend. So that's patreon.com/Sappening. But without any further ado, this is the wonderful Murray of the Excerpts on episode 222 of Sappening Podcast.
222. Sappening!
Sappening!
Oh, I do like Murray. I really like Murray.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Sappening!
Sappening!
What's up?
Oh,
I'm meant to say Sappening.
Of course you are. Yeah,
you just said it.
Come on, man. Jesus Christ. Well, anyway, this week's guest was Marie from the Excerpts. They got a new album out. That's it, really. Thank you, Sappening! Yeah, no. Murray, how are you?
I'm good, apart besides from the deep shame of letting you boys down. I'm good. I'm doing good.
It's fine. Yeah, there's no letting us down. You'd have to work very hard to let us down.
That's true.
We'll let you off though, because we have given you a massive headache for the last half an hour trying to connect everything audio-wise and whatnot to do this remotely. So we apologize on that behalf, but how are you doing, man? It's been a while. We haven't seen you in a long time. A lot of exciting things coming out. How's things just going day to day at the moment?
Yeah, good. I'm feeling really, really excited. Like, feeling very positive about the future, which for the past, you know, 2-3 years it's been pretty brutal out there. So it's nice to just feel like, I don't know, a sense of purpose and positivity in my life, because it's been so up and down over the past while, as it has been for everybody. So yeah, I'm feeling really good. Gimme's out in the world and gonna do the whole thing all over again. Get to do it again. Just lovely.
Yeah. Was there any moments where you were unsure what was coming next for you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think like, for us, we thought that like we timed it so well We were like, you know, basically had demoed, written and demoed the records right up until the point of the first lockdown. And we were like, boys, we've nailed this. We have absolutely timed this to perfection. We'll sit on the songs for 3 months and, you know, we'll put them under the microscope. We'll get them as great as possible. And then we'll be in the studio in like 3 months' time. We're good to go. No, didn't quite work out. And then when, you know, things opened up again, it there was a whole new batch of problems for us with kind of like really mundane businessy stuff. Kind of had a deal on the table that got pulled, and then we were kind of in limbo for a while making the album. So basically for us, we said to ourselves, right, we've waited all this time to make the record. So let's just record the record over the course of, I think it was a year. It ended up taking us just because we wanted the freedom. We were like, we're not tied to any record deal. We've waited this long. Let's just take our time and have as much fun as possible. And then a year passed. And yeah, got new management, and the new management company were like, you guys need to get this done now. This has to end. This is just mania at this point. So we were like, cool. So yeah, we just finished it. Honestly, we just finished it last month, January.
Wow.
The wire. So yeah, we were like, we've joined the pantheon of great rock artists who have taken it to the wire. we finally did it.
Like a Scottish Guns N' Roses with Chinese democracy. That's
exactly. Exactly. Let's hope it's a little better than that record.
That's the best record, surely. I don't even know if I ever... Do you know what? I don't even know if I've ever listened to that record all the way through.
Probably
not. Anyone has, really. Probably it was best really fucking long.
No way. I don't think... Have many people?
No, many? I don't even... Yeah, I doubt fucking Axl has. I doubt Axl has had a full listen.
Yeah, so that's where we're at.
Nice.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure there's a whole different load of emotions at the moment going on, because with the release of Gimme, I saw that you were already saying the band is reborn during this phase, and there's kind of like a new style, there's new aesthetics, new label with Unify all going on behind the scenes as well. Did it feel like a moment where you needed to reintroduce yourself, or did all these things just kind of come natural within that process, as you mentioned? Can you walk us through it a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, when we were making the record, I mean, you know, we're self-aware enough to know that the music was different than what we had done before. And in terms of just how we presented, or how we're going to present this project, you know, we definitely discussed that we wanted it to be overly bright and kind of brash, and like the record's pretty chaotic and kind of all over the shop, especially lyrically. It's kind of it's pretty messy. Like lyrically, it's pretty messy. So we were like, let's do that, and took a lot of inspiration from like 90s Green Day, when it was just like, you know, a little less speed on our part, but like that kind of just like, I remember, like even now when you look at those Green Day like aesthetics, they looked so cool, like in the 90s. I know they were really fucked up, but like they just looked great. So we were like, let's do that. So we took big inspiration from that, and it was definitely like there was purpose to it in the way that it looks, and the whole rollout of this album will look a very particular way. We just wanted it to be like, I know I've just said we took inspiration from another band, but we did very much want it to be one of one. We wanted it to just be, this could only be the excerpt. So yeah, that's how we felt about it. And we felt like we had a bit of an identity crisis after our last record, in that we definitely thought we should present ourselves in a certain way, like look a certain way. And when it came around to making this record, it's just like, we're going to do whatever the fuck we want to do, because that's who we are. So, yeah.
How did the signing to Unified come about? Because just before you announced that you were signed to them, they were doing that kind of like secretive, like, we've signed a band. Who do you think it is? And I didn't know at the time that you'd signed to them, but I'd sussed it out through the clues. And I was like, yeah. And I was like, I can't post. If I post about it, people are going to go like, you've got the inside scoop, you prick. And I had no idea whatsoever. But then I saw it and I was like, that's a fucking exit. That's the exit. Can I tweet? And I was like, if I tweet now, people are going to go like, you prick, I can't believe you did that. That's super selfish. But yeah, how did that come about?
You would have also been buried alive by the metalcore community for saying, how dare you think that Unified would sign this fucking band? How dare you? And everybody, it was funny because I was reading the comments and like so many people were trying to piece together because they saw the passport, but they just saw Ireland. So they were all trying to like think of these like Irish metalcore bands. And it was like, oh, damn, you're going to be so upset. And lo and behold, they were. Who would have thought? Who would have thought?
They had Scotland's premier metalcore band instead.
If only they knew where I'd come from. I used to play drums in My Mind's Weapon. You have no idea. My credentials, man. Funnily enough, it was, so our A&R guy, Leander, I've known him for years. He used to manage Architects.
He used to be in Hiding with Girls.
Yes. He used to sing in Hiding with Girls, and he also looked after Neck Deep and Lower Than Atlantis. And anyway, I hadn't spoken to Leander in a long time. And when we were kind of going through it with our previous label, I was out one night with Sam Carter from Architect. That was so weird saying his full name, but I didn't want somebody to dick.
Sam Philip Terrence Carter.
Samuel David Carter and I were out having a drink. So I was kind of just telling Sam what was going on, and he was like, you need to speak to Leander. And I was like, why? We've got management. He was like, no, he does A&R for Unified. That's who we used to be signed with. And he was like, I think he'll love it, even though that label isn't necessarily like, I don't know, wouldn't seem like a comfortable fit for us musically. So at that point, I was just like, you know, fuck it. I'm going to reach out to him. Just send him 5 songs. He might know somebody that he could put me in touch with, you know? So I sent him 5 songs and he came back just like so passionate and overjoyed about what we had done. And he, from the off, said, I have to sign this. And he's like, I have to get it through, like, I think there was maybe like 4 stages of people he had to get it through. And honestly, it was so quick. It was over and done with in weeks, really. Like of them, like sending us the offer. So we were just like, what? This is weird. Like, that's it. That is just done. Like, and especially with a label like Unified, I know all about Unified. And I think it's so, so cool that they wanted to branch out. They definitely wanted a UK band who kind of don't necessarily fit into their usual mold, because they've got a band out in Australia called Slowly, who had made a record with Jonathan Gilmore, who works with the 1975 and stuff. So they'd started branching out over in Australia. And then I think they wanted to do the same here. And they were so excited about the album. And we were just like, this is awesome. Because they were legitimately like very, very like passionate in a really intricate way, which was really cool. So yeah, it was super exciting. So that's how it came about. So really, again, I have Samuel David Carter to thank.
But it's lovely when moments like that happen so organically, like a friend recommends someone and then things like that just happen. But especially when you said that in the process of writing the album, there was a deal that kind of fell through. I'm sure like it's weird how these things just work themselves out in a lot of ways, because the industry is just full of that side of things.
It's who you know, baby. fake it till you make it. And yeah, like also like shout out Sam, because he also got in touch with the label personally to say, I love this record, I love this band, you need to sign it. So yeah, which was like, he's my brother at this point, but he didn't need to do that, and he did, and that's the Sam we all know and love. He is the real deal.
I'm gonna ask Sam, see what he can get me now. See if he can get me. What do I fancy? Yeah, what do I fancy?
If you get Spotify to give us the $5 billion deal for the podcast, I'll sell. Oh,
Sam knows somebody at Spotify. Yeah, Sam knows that big Swedish fella from fucking Spotify. I know.
Sam, honestly, Sam probably at this point like has spoken with Joe Rogan or something. Something insane, you know? So there's something. Maybe start small. Maybe start small. What do you need? Right, do you need anything for the house? You need an air fryer? What can I
imagine Sam, I'm spoken to you for a while, because something super important. Can you get hold of a plug for my fridge? My fridge is on a blink.
He'll do it.
Sam,
he'll
do it. You can get hold of anything. Yeah, Jesus. He's the most powerful man. The most powerful man in British music. Sam Carter.
Fucking hell, man. He is. I mean,
Sam, I fancy fronting Queen. You saw that? Yes, I can, Sean. You've got to be able to make me sing first, though, Sam. We'll figure it out somehow. Yeah, we've got to figure it out.
But Mary, for the people who don't know, like, you and Sam go way back. I've even like went to the same college and all that back in the day. Like, can you just talk about maybe the friendship of how you guys first met, and you've just obviously just been kind of best friends, stayed in touch, and helped each other on your musical journeys since then?
Yeah, so we met on the first day of college, and this sounds like it's made up, but it's 100% true. So myself and Jordan were walking down the road to the front door of the college, and there was a few guys outside just smoking. And as I was approaching the front door, I said to Jordan, I was like, that guy looks exactly like me. Like, we are, I was like, we're dressed the same. We have the same stupid haircut. Like, both in slip-on Vans, girl skinny jeans, and youth medium band shirt. Classic, you know, classic looks. Just slaying from day one, baby. And he had like I think we both had kind of the under-oathy hair at the time, you know, the MySpace look. It was the generic MySpace look. And Jordan was like, whoa, that's weird. And basically, me and Sam, I reached Sam, and we both just kind of looked at one another. And usually in that scenario, two musicians who look identical would be like, nah. Yeah. Nah, fuck this guy. Who the fuck? We've played enough festivals to know that feeling and that scenario. Like, you know, nah, fuck this guy. Fuck him. Give a shit.
He's like a shit me.
One of us needs to go home and change, and it's not me.
That, exactly that. And we basically just both burst out laughing, complimented one another, hugged, and that was it. That was it. Then
that could have gone so different. Yeah, imagine the world could be a different place.
And also, not long after that, so we started hanging out a lot, and Sam was on the drum course, and I was on the songwriting course. So we'd always hang out after college. And when our original drummer left, Sam said he would play drums for us. Which is such a weird thought.
Yeah.
That, like, it was never destined to happen. Sam was always destined to be the superstar that he is. But there was a conversation between myself and Jordan, like, maybe Sam would be great. But whatever, I think he ended up joining Architects super quick after that. And we were already really close with Tom, and he seemed to suit the style more than Sam. Sam was like a real, like, incredible punk drummer, like just double time. So we were like, maybe stylistically it doesn't make sense, but it all worked out for him. It all worked out.
Well, it worked out for you both. Well, it worked out for you both, really. Because, like, imagine if he was in the band. Think how different you'd maybe sound now. Like, you'd probably be tired from all the punk drumming, to be honest. Fucking slow down! I want to do a ballad! I long for a ballad!
Let's do a ballad. Please, please, let's slow this down. I don't think around that time we wouldn't have been able to tour together. One of us would have come home in a body bag for sure. Just fucking stupid boys that like having fun. So yeah, no, it all worked out. But that kind of like he's played such an instrumental part in our career and like even when he joined Architects and I met all those guys and then ended up singing on one of their records. And then the Unified connection, because Architects used to be signed with Unified and Leander, you know, used to manage Architects. It's gone very full circle. Yeah.
It's nice to see a band not hate the former label, to be honest. So the fact that Sam even suggested Unified and stuff is quite nice, because how many bands leave a label and there's some sort of bitter taste in their mouth is unbelievable, I guess.
Oh my God. Yeah. Completely. He had nothing but brilliant things to say about them. It just so happened that Epitaph got to a point where they could release worldwide and in Australia because they're so big now. That was the only reason. So yeah, Architects got signed to Epitaph worldwide and that's why they left. That was it. So he was still so kind of glowing about the label that it was pretty much a no-brainer at that point. I think we were having a couple of other conversations, but from the off, it was just like, these are good people that get what we're doing. And also, in a way, kind of don't, which is uncomfortable in a really great way for us. Because the whole point of us making this record was the whole thing was uncomfortable. It was, you know, whole thing was about not resting on laurels or kind of doing what we had done before. You know, every decision we made was a little bit kind of grinding in a really exciting way.
Yeah. Well, I love these kind of back to the future. If you step on a butterfly, the world changes as we know it moments. And it seems like there's so much to that throughout your career. But speaking of those really early days, before you decided to really be a full-blown vocalist and a songwriter, am I right in saying that your mindset was stuck on drumming for a long time?
Yeah, originally I was a drummer and I think I alluded to the fact I played drums in a metalcore band called My Mind's Weapon. I'm not on any of the recordings, so anything you hear isn't me, because I couldn't really play that kind of thing at all. They shoved me behind a kit and I had to figure out how to play double kicks real quick. And then I got turfed out of that band because I got too stoned before a show. And
everything was half time. Everything was half time.
Hadn't even set up my cymbals and, you know, no. I was trash and it was a complete car crash. And I actually thought it was a really sick show and went down in Aberdonian folklore of how dreadful I was. So yeah, that was my time in the metalcore scene.
Do you get flashbacks if you ever sit behind a drum kit now? Are you like, whoa, fucking shouldn't have had that Jamaican cigarette.
I was also in a band. That band was, there was maybe a five piece. I think they were a five piece. So I just had like four, because I was really young at the time. I just had four adults staring at me. Like with
being
that.
Stoned. Yeah. The pressure of that. Yeah.
With that look of,
paranoid anyway. I've forgotten how we start. I'm gonna go 1, 2, 3, 4 now and see what comes out. Ready? 1, 2, 3, 4.
I think in my mind, I absolutely killed it. Of course I did. I was like, fucking dude, like, let's all just chill out and just enjoy the moment, man.
Why are you so angry, man? Why are you so
guys, let's do a Jimi Hendrix cover now. Come on, let's just fucking, let's just loosen up, man. Why are you so angry? Come on. You know, that. It was that. Subsequently got turfed out of the band, which made complete sense musically and personally. But yeah, the Exorcist started before then. But yeah, originally I was a drummer, but I think I caught the frontman bug pretty early on. Like played drums for a few years and then in a couple of bands, and before I knew it, I was, you know, asking for the mic to sing behind the drum kit. Phil Collins, you know, syndrome very early on. And so before I knew it, I was like, I want to be out there jumping about, shouting into a microphone. So yeah.
And I also don't want to be carrying all of these fucking drums up of the stairs of the venues I got to get to.
Oh my God. I'm in an adoration of drummers who are still doing it. I still see like students and stuff, you know, wheeling their drum kits in trolleys to a gig or to a rehearsal. It's just like, oh my, I remember those days so vividly. Thankfully, we had like really supportive parents who would drive us, which is so good. They drive us everywhere around Scotland. But yeah, seeing people just lugging gear, it's like, oh, I feel for you. But fair play, a good test in like determination and self-will. Like, if you're going
to
do it.
It's definitely one you have to commit to. It's an instrument you have to commit to. There's no just half-assed. Yeah. Some people just half-assed buy a guitar and pick it up every now and again and stuff, and you get it. Cool, it's a hobby. But with drums, you can't really just keep that shit around and not use it.
You also can't be like, oh, do you know what? I'm going to take half my kit today. I can't be bothered. Like, you can't be like, oh, I'm going to take one tom. I'll take one tom. I can't be
exactly
bothered.
And like also with the drum kit, you know, like the amount of times when we were younger, you'd arrive at a venue and be like, oh, I forgot my guitar lead. I don't have a pick. I used to ask touring bands for picks all the time. And I have a little list of bands who became quite successful, who I know gave me a pick and who didn't.
Ooh.
And some of those pricks' careers have died a brutal death. And it's because they didn't give me a pick.
So who was the most famous person to give you a plectrum?
I have a feeling, not famous, but in the world of the British alternative scene, this is pretty big, but the guitar player from Hell is for Heroes gave me a pick.
Nice.
That was super tight. They were like the nicest dudes. I could blast another band. I didn't ask them for a pick. They just treated us terribly, but I'm not going to because we were so young.
Come on. God.
Wait, are they still a band? If they're not a band anymore, then
I think they are still a band. Oh, fuck it. I'm going to say it because I don't care. It's In Me. Do you know In Me?
Oh, yes, we do.
Yeah.
Well,
no.
Dave, man. Can I borrow a plectrum? No. Oh, no.
You know what? I didn't even ask for anything that day. I wasn't even annoying. They were just not good people to young excerpts. And we were young. We were like 16. So,
yeah. Could it have been a bad day or could it have just...
Yeah, you know what? It's. And I think at that time, like, knowing what I know now, that band were probably under so much pressure. And like having a bad day on tour, they were probably on a 20-day tour in Aberdeen. I get it. So it was. I shouldn't bad.
I've had moments with people in bands as well where they've been fucking horrible. And now looking back, and I'm like, oh yeah, you were probably just you. I know. I remember you had to lug all your gear up the stairs in Club Eva Bach. That's enough to upset anybody.
That's
ridiculous to me. That's fine. But yeah.
I get it. And yeah, like there's probably so many bands out there who like probably have something pretty bad to say about us. You know, you just never know on what day when it's like any given day on tour, you could be in the room just like, I just don't want to speak to anyone.
Yeah. We're going the opposite end of that. Do you remember the first time somebody in a band you loved showed you attention or showed you some love?
Yeah, actually, you know what? A really big one, and this will be the last time when I saw you, was at the Busted show, right?
Yeah, yeah.
When we were on I remember Charlie Simpson, when Fight Star was a thing, him giving us like big props in Kerrang or something about our first record. I remember being like, whoa, that's a famous person to me. Because when I was a kid, I used to have a lot of time for Busted. Mm. I used to love Busted. Me and my sister used to watch their Wembley DVD. We used to watch that all the time. I just liked them. And so when Charlie said that, I was like, oh my God, that's Charlie Simpson. And especially because he was like a household name. Like my mom and my sister and my cousin and my, you know, everybody was just lost it because Charlie Simpson said really nice things about our record. So that was a big moment. And then getting to tour with them was like, yeah, another nice full circle life moment. That was such a great tour.
Yeah.
Yeah. And now he's the rhino. And now he's the rhino.
Insane. Totally insane. But that dude's voice is... Jordan describes it as fine oak.
Ooh.
Just.
That's a good description, to be fair.
I was going to say tough smoke.
Yeah, well, you know.
It rhymes.
Exactly. It's all related to like fine scotch cigars.
Lovely, lovely fella. What an absolutely lovely fella. Mm. I've got a bad word to say about him. He's always been lovely to us as well.
Yeah.
He's just the best. He's such a... He's a real beautiful soul, Charlie. He's just like, that guy is super, he just is who he is. Like, there's no, like, air of cool about him or, like, this false pretense or, like, he never has a guard up or acts like a rock star or anything like that. He's just good, solid dude.
Yeah, Fight Star took the blackout on one of our first tours.
No way.
Yeah, we turned up the first day and there was like, because he hadn't long left Busted, I think. Everybody around him was like fucking walking on eggshells. So it was like Mr. Simpson this, Mr. Simpson that, and fucking, you know, giving him the full arse lick or whatever. But then there was one time when he came into our dressing room, us being the six fucking Welsh boys who shouldn't be allowed out of fucking South Wales. We were like, Simpson, turn around and fuck off. You got your own dressing room. Because we treated him normally. I think because we treated him normally, he liked that, as opposed to everybody else giving him Mr. Simpson this and Mr. We were like, you got your own fucking dressing room away from your own band. What the fuck are you doing in our dressing room? Get out. That's where we hit it off. And the fact that we treated him just like fucking anybody else, I think, was really helped the relationship. But he's an absolute sweetheart. I got a load of time for Charlie.
I think that's all anybody wants at that stage when they become that recognizable is just a bit of normality. We, funnily enough, when we toured with Fight Star, our funny story from that tour was that they had two roast chickens delivered every day to their dressing room.
What?
Every day.
Every day.
Most bands get pizza after a show. That's what generally happens, but they would get chickens before their show. And this was
same time or stagnated.
Same time.
So the chickens.
Two chickens.
Oh, okay.
Two hot chickens every day. And
good
we'd be in,
two hot chickens.
Yeah. We'd be in the dressing room every day, like with, you know, crate of water, crate of warm beer, and a pot of hummus and a spoon. And every day we'd smell the hot chicken, the roast chicken, and so. I have to preface this with, this is pre-veganism, pre-plant-based diet. And it was at time like we were just like, you know what it's like, it's you, as a support act, when you get the bare bones of a rider, you're starving and you got no money and you're eating anything you can get your hands on. So every day they would go on stage and we'd sneak in. Every day there was no
and
chicken.
Have a lick. Just a lick. One lick.
There was nothing. There was just bones. Nothing.
Ah.
Every day they would eat those chickens. Or hide them. They probably knew. We were all like so, we looked so malnourished and unwell during that time. So they probably knew we wanted a bit of protein. But never got the chicken.
Do you know what? I've never heard of a band having two chickens delivered. I saw Fred Durst get upset because his pizza didn't turn up before he went on once.
Before?
That was fun. Yeah. So his tour manager at the time. So we were out on tour with them. Our dressing room one day was just like a back hall. Their day-to-day manager, he had set up like screens, you know, like the old 1950s screens women would get changed behind or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He had one of them with, I think it had the Beatles on it or whatever. But he had made himself a little office by the doorway. So you came in and you were just in this little screen thing he had. And Fred came in and we're behind the screen further in the room. And we hear Fred come in and he said, I want my pizza before the show, man. I kicked this wall and the whole thing fell down. And then we were just there staring and he was like, and he just walked out. And I was like, yes. I've seen Fred Durst have a wobbly. I've waited this whole tour for a wobbly, and he's finally had one.
So he wanted the pizza before the show.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, what a mad fucker.
Yeah,
going on with the stodge luck. Yeah,
that's that's like that's some sort of like the carb equivalent of James Brown demanding his fee before he goes on stage.
Yeah, you know.
Like that to me is some of the coolest shit ever. Like, nah, I ain't going on stage until I get my money. Fuck yeah.
I want my pizza now.
Pizza, I want my fucking pizza now. And if I don't load up...
Talk about a power move, though. I mean, if you don't go on and everyone's waiting for you, I mean, that is the best chance to get your fee. So don't blame
me. Why were Limp Bizkit late? Nah, Fred wanted some cheese and bread.
Yeah. That's the level we're all aspiring to get to, really.
Oh, yeah. Everyone. Every day. Like,
yeah, I've got one more slice in me before I fucking walk out there. Give me a minute.
Oh, if you want me to keep on rolling, you better fucking give me a pizza right now.
You better keep rolling that dough and get me my za.
It's just one of those days. Give me my pizza.
But Going back a little bit, Murray, talking about the last album, Hold On To Your Heart, you mentioned earlier about having a real identity crisis post that cycle. And I think for fans looking in, that album was such a big moment for you guys because it kind of opened you up to a lot of different headline tours and supporting some huge, huge artists. You mentioned Busted on all those arena shows. What was it after that where you were a bit lost? Was it just kind of not being able to pinpoint yourselves in a certain scene? Because I always feel like the Exits as being someone who has kind of been a part of loads of different avenues in the industry, but you know, it's not just like one subgenre that fits you. You have that kind of indie output, loads of emo fans love you. Where was that mindset at?
Yeah, so it was on the, we released an EP around the time of the Busted Tour called Wild Heart Dreaming, sorry. And it has the song You Mean Everything on it. And I think it was kind of, it was like the perfect storm around that time for us to kind of panic because we got the Busted Tour. We weren't too sure how that was going to go down with kind of our core fan base. And then we released the EP, which was just like, it was just an EP of B-sides. But around that time when we released them, I started to worry that they just sounded a little bit safe, plain almost. So we went and did the Busted Tour and had such a fun time playing in those rooms because we'd never played arenas. When you play, like, Hold On To Your Heart built for those rooms. And so we each night we were like, oh my god, it's coming to life. This is, you know, this is what we dreamed of when we made this record. and we're here. Like, I thought we killed it on that tour. I thought we played great. We were really confident. The songs translated really well. And people got really into it, made a lot of new fans. And then we went straight onto a headline tour to promote this new EP. And all of a sudden, we're back in like 300 to 600 cap rooms. And on stage, I was just like, wait, who am I meant to be right now? Because we're back in kind of like punk rooms. And that's where we came from. But all of a sudden, we're like, I'm fucking donning white trousers and leather jacket and shaking my hips and trying to do like a Jagger thing. And then all of a sudden I felt like really embarrassed to be doing that in a smaller room. And so we got to the end of that tour and I just felt almost like really uncomfortable within myself and had to speak about it with Jordan and Tom. And it was a big conversation actually whilst we made the record about kind of our identity and whatnot. And the problem for us was that we almost, for the first time in our career, tried to fit into a mold. And it was really uncomfortable. So the whole point of kind of the conversations before and during and after making this album was for us to feel comfortable, we have to be uncomfortable. That was basically how it felt to us. And the whole thing of never fitting into like one genre, like we've never, ever, ever cared for genre. It's like when we were younger, like Glassjaw meant as much to us as Forte, as much as Prince meant to us as like Blood Brothers or Elliot Smith. There are all these things that like, we just love it all. And, the conversation before we made this record was we are an alternative band. That's what we are. So let's make an alternative record and kind of let's make a record where adult us meets younger us. And that was the point of the album. And it's funny now that genre is completely dead. Completely dead. Like, you know, there's still obviously like metal bands are metal bands, but now even with metal, there's so much going on with new metal bands and different influences are seeping into the genre and it's all moving forward. So for us, it was now, we were like, now we really don't give a fuck about genre. So, you know, we are going to do a big kind of hyper-pop inspired 1 minute 40 blast of pop. And then we are going to put a jazz song on the records and we are going to take our like, nighttime British garage influence and do a song like that and put that on the record and then do the acoustic thing because we can and it's within us to do. So it took a while to sort of know what kind of record we wanted to make. But that's kind of where the kind of identity crisis is where it kind of was the launching pad for what we were going to do next. And it wasn't anyone's fault. It was just ourselves really. And it's sometimes hard to take a step back from your own band and kind of observe your own group from a bird's eye point of view. It's really, really fucking hard to do that. And we haven't often done it, but we had to do it to realize like, this isn't the excerpts. This isn't how we want to be perceived. It was more to do with the EP, not Hold On To Your Heart. It was more what kind of came after and how we were looking, and we could have easily gone down another route of like almost going even more kind of like Snow Patrol-y almost. And the band are great and they're great songwriters, but it's just not within us to do that. It was like, no, let's be fucking proud about our individuality. So that was the point of this record.
Yeah.
Well, I think you described the vibe of some of the songs on the album perfectly then. Like I got sent it this morning.
Sick.
I had a listen and it's fantastic. Well done.
Oh, thank you, dude.
Like you mentioned those hyperpop moments and stuff and shorter songs. Was that a conscious decision?
Yes. Yeah, we fucking wrote a record for TikTok and unified. No, sorry. I'm making a joke there about what people have said online. Because I know, dude, this is the first time we've released a song that has been polarizing, and I fucking love it. I love the conversation because throughout the whole time we made this new record, Steve Ansell, who plays drums in Blood Red Shoes, he produced the record. So for, I kid you not, for a year, about three times a week, we'd be recording something. He was like, they have to hate this. They have to hate it. You have to be a hated band. Like, he was like, it's too safe for you guys. You've always had a like free pass from journalists and people because you're in this lane and, you know, very safe lane, and people are really kind about your band. He was like, it's fucking time for people to hate you. And we were always like, we get it. And then when we dropped Gimme, it was like, whoa, oh shit, okay. This is the internet in 2023. Okay.
Yeah.
So yeah, sorry, Sean, I was making a joke about people were like, there was a huge thread of people talking about this song being made for TikTok, and it was like,
yeah, but that only works if the songs are 15 to 30 seconds long. If they're any longer, they still don't work for TikTok.
Trust me, if we were that calculated, it certainly wouldn't have been Gimme. Fuck me. like how many 1:40 hyper pop songs are going like mad viral? Harry Styles goes viral on TikTok. The closest thing in the alternative world I can think of, rock-wise, is like Bring Me a Machine Gun Kelly. Everything else, it's hard out there on TikTok. I'm just learning about it now. But yeah, so people like going in saying the label made them write this song for TikTok. It's like, yeah, in God, what world? In what world? And it's like, I've got the video of day one of us recording Gimme. And I found it the other day because we wanted to post it on TikTok, ironically. we started writing that song in July 2020. I didn't know what TikTok was.
Yeah.
Then TikTok became a thing really in what, like 2021? A real thing?
Lockdown really is when people started really going on about it.
Yeah, so I was not educated in TikTok. It's just
I'm still not. I still refuse. I'm too old. I'm not having it.
It's we don't have a choice. God damn it, I'm so jealous. We don't have a choice. You guys should though. You should.
We did once. Yeah, I posted. So I DJed a My Chemical Romance Milton Keynes shows, and they give me a hotel room in the stadium, which was overlooking the stage. So my first post from the Sapling TikTok was me going up to like my fucking bedroom window, opening a thing and going, fucking shut up, Mike M. And that did 2.2 million views in a day.
No.
Yeah.
And I was like, I am TikTok. I am the king of TikTok. Come to me.
I am the fucking algorithm. Embodied.
Yeah.
I am the Elon Musk of TikTok. And the next one had like 600 views. Yep. I was like, oh, biggest fall off of all time.
And then I'm trying to just post it for us on the reg. And then it's like, oh, no one cares about that. Okay, fine. I'll just stick to Instagram. No one cares.
Yeah, if it's not Mike M, the week Mike M are playing, we're not getting any fucking views.
Dude, it's that's amazing that your first swing though.
Oh, completely. I was like, oh, it's this easy. Swing. Oh, I'm going to be a millionaire in no time. Wrong.
No, it's, TikTok's funny because it's just like, our most viewed video on there is me skanking to Less Than Jake in the studio. That's where we're at. That's where we're fucking at. And that video went up and it's not had like crazy, crazy views, but like in comparison with our other ones, like I said to our team, I was like, fuck me, I can't wait until we have like the nice professional videos of Gimme going up on TikTok. And then they went up nothing because they don't like it. TikTok, the algorithm doesn't like it. They want raw footage. I was like, God damn it, I can't be skanking my way through our career. I ain't bringing it back.
That's the thing. You'd have people come into your gigs going, oh, you come and see that boy who skanks on TikTok tonight? He's got a band. Yeah, I've got a band. Yeah, the name of the TikTok is the band. Yeah, they've got songs and stuff. Their own songs as well. Oh, I don't like bands with their own songs. Oh, yeah, TikTok.
Is he not just going to skank to ska punk from the 90s?
Yeah, no?
I tell you, it's going that way. If the album flops...
Yeah, you'll have to come back on for encores and start doing fucking TikTok dances.
My ska knowledge is pretty good, because back in the day when we were coming up, like, Moon Ska Records was a huge thing, so we used to support all these fucking, like, Whitmore and Mixed Witch and King
wait,
Prawn.
I put some of these on. King Prawn, yeah.
Jesse James. It's just the shoes you wear.
Four Foot Fingers
opened for them.
Wow.
Who else was there? Oh my God. Well, Cap Down were sick. They were fucking unreal.
Adequate Seven.
Oh my God.
Somewhere between Scar and Refused.
Yeah, bizarre. Link 80, they were cool. Yeah, crazy. But I can't believe this conversation's gone down a ska route.
Hey, I did welcome not see to this coming. Where everything goes weird.
What were we talking about before I started? TikTok. The length of songs.
Yes, sorry.
Yeah, the length of songs. No, it wasn't... it wasn't a calculated move or anything. It was just, we've always been of the opinion, if I've said everything I've needed to say within a certain time frame, then we don't need to extend a song. And the whole point of Gimme was just meant to be like a little explosion of just fun. Just a 1 minute 40 of like, What the fuck? What's the, you know, just a blast. Like, honestly, we just wanted to make our own version of Holla Back Girl. It was like super Pharrell influenced and just wanted to do that, but like really gnarly guitars and just repeat itself. Like really, really basic song structure, like almost like early Beatles structure wise. Like it's just three different parts repeated, really. But that was the whole point. It was like, let's do as much as we can with as little as we have. And we also thought, like, all these sections individually are so cool, I just want to hear them again. So yeah, and then there's like, I think there's a couple of other shorter ones on the record. Again, didn't feel right to extend them. Even Ache with Sam, it just there was questions about maybe repeating a chorus, like a double chorus, but just didn't feel right. And that's all you can go on in the studio's instinct. And it was easy enough for us to, like, you know, extend a chorus and hear it back. And it was just like, it's not right. It's more like, I'd rather people get to the end of a song and go again, 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 rather than like a 6 minute opus where they're exhausted by minute two, you know? So yeah, it really wasn't calculated or that thought out. It just, the explosive moments had to be as fun and as short as possible for us, because it was like, we just want a burst of like bombast and then gone. Mm. And then on to the next one. So,
well, I always feel it's a testament when those comments are polarizing, of people absolutely loving it and can't get enough of it, or there's people angry that the fact that you've got a colorful jumper on instead of a leather jacket.
The jumper too key. I couldn't believe the jumper too key. I thought it was a guaranteed like winner. I was like, fuck yeah, this jumper is great. Nope. Got heat for the jumper.
People will pick up on the littlest things and it's crazy. But Murray, as we start to wind down on this conversation a little bit and talking about your songwriting, there's one track in particular I kind of wanted to get your take on from your back catalogue. And every now and again, when we get a guest on whose music I've experienced a lot in my life, I always like to mention there always seems to be like one song that is more dedicated for your core fan base than anyone who's just kind of listened to singles and everything. And for the exits, I always think that's Aberdeen 1987, because yeah. I feel that's become such a cult track for people who attend your gigs regularly, who always want it in the set list. If it's not in there, a big staple part of the show is missing. You just got to look at your festival appearances from places like 2000 Trees, for example, and it's become such a rich history track. Do you feel that's more of a song for those diehard fans of yours than anything else?
It's an interesting one with that song, because, yeah, you're right. Over time, I think maybe 2000 Trees Festival had a lot to do with that song kind of doing what it's done. I remember when we first played there, playing this tiny, tiny tent to like 100 people crammed in. They used to have this, I think it was called like the Leaf Stage or something. Can't remember it. Anyway, it was a tiny tent. It was rammed and 100 people were there just screaming that song. And we were like, whoa, this is weird. Because at the time down in England, we were really struggling to pull people. We were like, whoa, look at that. 100 people there screaming that song. And then each year we went back, the crowds got bigger and bigger and bigger. And the sing-alongs to that song in particular got bigger and bigger and bigger. And I always find it really funny because I can't really listen to the recording of that song because we recorded it in my friend's bedroom and I had a cold and I think I sound so bad on that song that I can't imagine anybody hearing it for the first time at, say, somewhere like 2000 Trees Festival, going back and listening to that recording thinking, this is fucking red hot. Like, I just think... I sound horrible on it. Like, and I actually, funnily enough, a couple of years ago, re-recorded it. And this was interesting because it was a much nicer recording and it was a bit more adult, I guess, and I added some different textures to it. And I sang it in a different way. It was a little more tender and hushed. And I listened back to it and was like, doesn't have that thing. Just doesn't have that, whatever it was that we captured in that recording, it just doesn't have it. It's lost the magic. So we'll probably never put it out, but yeah, it is a fascinating thing to watch that song grow and grow and grow, but it's not done like mad numbers on streaming. It's just live. So it does make me think that people maybe listen to it once and go, yeah, I got it. Got the lyrics. I got it. I'll just sing along the track. That's enough of that. But I think that song to me is like a, just from my point of view, it's like a really beautiful snapshot of a moment in time, and it very much feels like a photograph. How, you know, it feels like, yeah, almost like an audio photograph to me. It's very much like a specific moment in time, and I think it's a very true story. Like, there's three different stories in that song, and each verse is a different kind of tale that all ties together with the chorus. So I think, yeah, each verse is like a specific snapshot that people can relate to. It's all about relatability, right? So I think, there was a lot of nostalgia in it, even when we wrote it. It's so weird. Like, I can't explain that. But yeah, I'm just glad people appreciate that song because we still love it. I still love playing it. I'm really proud of that song. Just wish I hadn't had a cold on the day of recording.
Well, that's the thing. I bring it up because there's been so many times like seeing you live or at Trees or anything like that. And you just kind of take a moment to look at the crowds belting it. You know, it doesn't matter if they're drunk, sober, wherever. They waited bits of the set to scream that back at you. And when you just think like, it's not a single, as you said, it hasn't done mad numbers on streaming service. There's no music video for it. It's like, if you know, you know, kind of song.
Yeah, it really is. And I think it's a beautiful thing for us because I wrote that song not long after I'd moved from Aberdeen to Brighton. So the stories within that song are kind of set in two different cities, and it was during a time where I was really kind of missing Aberdeen and really longing for Aberdeen. So maybe that's why there's like a hint of nostalgia in there, or certainly like a sense of longing. I remember writing it in my room and showing it to Jordan, and I actually was trying to rip off a Get Up Kids track called Campfire Kansas. And it sounds nothing like that. So that's always what happens. You try and, you know, you try and rip off all the Batgirl and you get Gimme. It's that kind of thing. You know, it's like, it's your own interpretation, but the influence from Get Up Kids was there. And so I remember writing it in this tiny little room in our first flat that we moved to and showing it to Jordan. He was like, that feels really special to me. And I think because obviously Jordan had moved from Aberdeen as well. And I think the two of us just thought it was like good song. Just, you know, at its core, it was like, this is an interesting song. The structure is pretty interesting. And the fact that we still play it now and it's getting like a bigger reaction than ever. It's genuinely like overwhelming. It is overwhelming to me. And it does make me feel really emotional because it was written from such an innocent, like an innocent point of view and time. It was like, you know, at that time wasn't thinking about anything other than just writing a pretty song about a few scenarios that had happened in two different cities. So, don't take it for granted. And I love the fact that at 2000 Trees, especially, or anywhere, even the room's getting bigger on our headline shows, like the sing-alongs are getting louder and louder. I can't keep up. But we used to know which city was the loudest, and now I can't keep up.
What a fucking, yeah, what a lovely problem to have. What a lovely problem to have.
I can't
work out which city loves this song the most. They all love it so much. Oh, do you know what? Oh, I'm sick of it. Damn. I'm sick of Londoners singing back to me. Coming over here. What? That doesn't make sense.
Well, that's the thing. I never thought, and you'll know this, like, when you start playing in a band, the thought of people coming to see you in London was like, it's never going to happen. And then when they start coming, you're like, oh my God, I fucking made it. I've done it.
London. Bow down, Sadiq Khan. I'm the mayor now. I've just played Water Rat.
Oh, dude. We had a, this is such a weird story. I'll tell it real quick.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We had a showcase gig on at Water Rats, you know, industry. It was like, this is the big one, boys. You're going to be fucking massive after this. It was like, all right, it's on. Here we go. Our ticket out of here. And on the day of the show, so did you know above the Water Rats, there's some sort of, let me get the wording of this right or else I might get in trouble. Not a Freemasons.
Oh, okay, yes.
Okay, right.
Not a cult. Not a cult. Don't come for me.
Some old lads with funny handshakes, yeah.
They had a Freemasons thing upstairs. I don't know what went on up there. Murder. And no. Oh god, they're coming for all of us.
Allegedly, water rats.
Has nothing to do with us. Aim for the excerpts. It's fuck all to do with something. I didn't bring it up.
So one of the old boys died, and they were I'm not laughing at that, but I'm laughing at this scenario. Oh god. Again, I'm gonna get cancelled for this one.
It's all right. Yeah, Freemasons don't have souls, it doesn't count.
One of the old boys from the Freemasons died, and they called our management on the day saying, "We're hosting a ceremony in honor of him. You can't play. Or can you keep it? Or actually, no, can you change your set time?" They wanted to push us back to later. And our management were like, "No fucking way. This is the ticket. We're out of here. It's half an hour. We got to play. So these Freemasons fucking paid us off and gave us basically a residency at Water Rats for a month. So what? In a month, we played the Water Rats like 6 times in 1 month. And also got a fee from this group of gentlemen.
Wow.
To not play. So yeah, everyone has their price. That's all I'm saying. We could have been fucking headlining arenas by now, you know, worldwide tour. No. We got paid off. We were like, yeah, cool.
Take that. Fuck it. Yeah.
How much?
It. Yeah.
100 quid, done. Cool.
Yeah, 100 quid. Oh, yeah. Kickstarter career or 100 quid. I'll have the 100 quid now.
I'll have the 100 quid now. I'm skin. No, they paid us a bit of coin, silly money, just to not play.
I'm going to start booking random shows at Water Rats now in hopes that one of the Freemasons dies and then they've got to pay me off for the show.
Crazy.
It's a business
story.
It's a business idea. Yeah?
Write that down.
Water Rat Mason. But yeah. Before you go, I just wanted to say, we got sent the video for Ake earlier as well, and that
amazing,
very very fun. I think people will be excited to see that, and the new record just seems fun. It seems like you had a good time recording it, and that definitely transcends in what I've heard so far. So just want to say congratulations.
Amazing.
It's wicked.
Thank you so much. No, we love it, and I'm so immensely proud of it, and just kind of just still being able to release music this far into our career. Like, it's not lost to me that we started this band when we were 15, and we've just kind of put our heads down and worked and just hope the universe will kind of have our backs. And the fact that we're still here and able to release music is, and I get to chat to you boys and you want to speak to me. It's like, yeah, it's not
sorry about
how special
it is. Sorry about having to talk to us. Yeah. That is the downfall.
Yeah.
Press and twats. And I apologize. So
I love it.
But yeah,
I love speaking to you.
We love speaking to you. This is always fun.
You're always welcome on whenever you want. But before we wrap this up, Murray, is there anything else you'd like to just let the people know, plug, mention? Please do.
So I'm trying to think what's going to be out by this point. Well, we've mentioned Ake and Sam's on the record. There's going to be a lot of touring coming up. There's so many announcements coming up, basically. But yeah, we got a new record coming, and Ake with Sam Carter's out March 8th. Yeah, see what people think of that. If you don't like it, it's Sam's fault. So don't like that one. That's definitely on Sam.
That's fair. That's a good excuse as any. But Murray, always a pleasure seeing you. I'm so excited for everything to come, and I'm sure we'll after you again very very soon.
Amazing. Thank you so much, guys. I really appreciate it. I love you both dearly.
You're listening to Sappy Podcast.
Yes. Woo! Thanks. What the fuck was that? You sounded like a firework being sick.
Firework being sick, that's a new one.
It's the Blackout's new song title. There are no new Blackout songs. No, anyway, what a great chat again with Murray from the Exits. I love seeing him and hearing him talk about his bromance with Sam. He lights up, as we mentioned, in the snippet of the video I saw. It's a very, very fun video featuring Sam from Architects. Yeah, it's just contagious. The smiling and the fun they're having is contagious. So check that out. The song is called Ache. It will be out March the 8th. As always, thank you to Marie for giving us the time.
Yes, one of the favorite people in music. He's so down to earth and you can tell he just likes hanging out with us and having a laugh about everything, which I absolutely adore. Ache will be available March 8th, as you mentioned, but it's available for pre-save on Spotify and Apple right now. So go and do it after you finish listening to this episode. More details on the album that will be coming at some point during the year. That's all we can tell you so far, even though we've already heard it. Ha ha ha, in your face, everyone listening. Over the Excerpt social media, at the Excerpt and Unifies as well. So just follow them and keep up to date with everything going on. The band will be performing at 2000 Trees Festival this summer, so we're excited to see them there. And we might have a surprise to announce with the Exits and awesome too. That's all
Why
I can
are you
say
getting so fucking high? Cut down a couple of octaves.
Higher, higher.
Too high, it is.
Yeah, that was way too high. Yeah. I think that last bit was for dogs only. So if your dog is listening to this podcast, I'm sorry that they now are in an outrage of excitement.
Yes. So yeah, go and give us a follow at Sappening Pod on Twitter, Instagram and TikTok, which we talked about earlier. Go run them numbers up, as the kids say. Yes, something magical might be happening between us all on one of those social media platforms at some point. I've said too much.
Tell you what you could tell us more about though, Sean.
What's that?
Is what you're going to be doing this weekend in Manchester and Nottingham.
Well, I'm DJing in Manchester and Nottingham this weekend. Friday, I'm DJing at Manchester Academy 3, supporting the Punk Rock Factory. And then in Nottingham at Rock City the day after on Saturday, I'm DJing at the Punk Rock Factory show. And then afterwards, there's like a party at the Rock City Beta, which I believe is the second room, where I'll be DJing there as well. So if you haven't got tickets to those gigs, sucks to be you. I believe they're sold out. But come along to the after show party anyway. Come and see me. It'd be nice, isn't it? I think. I don't know. You know, if you like me, I don't know. Do you like me? If you like me, tweet at us at Sappening Pod. Yes.
Well, they don't even have to like you. They just have to like other people's songs that you would.
Shut up, man. I want to know if people like me.
Oh, God.
Spoiling it, will you?
If you do like us, me included.
No, I'm going first. Listen, I'm going first. You could do next week's one. If you like me, say yes. Anyway, carry on. We're going to see.
I was trying to seamlessly link us together and segue to our Patreon page at patreon.com/sappening. Because if people do like us, that's the best way to support us and keep this thing going and get involved, have a look at things behind the scenes, meet new best friends with the community, you know, all the fun stuff.
Yeah. Ignore that bit I said about saying yes. Just go to patreon.com, sign up now, sign up for a quid, at the very least. Whatever you can afford. Help the boys out, man. Cheers. Thank you very much. Tidy, I'm lost now and where to go.
If you head to the description of this episode, there's loads of names there that you'll see that we thank. But as always, Sean's going to give a massive shout out to the elite members of our Sappening Podcast Patreon community. Those are the people on the top tiers.
Thank you very much. Kylie Wheeler, Mayumi Liwoway, Janelle Caston, Paul Hirschfield, Scarlett Charlton, Tony Michael, Dilly Grimwood, Kelly Ewan, Natasha Morris, Nathan Croshaw, Mitch Perry, Emma Barber, Sammy G, Kat Besson, Dana Lasnova, Jenny Robertson, Murray Grimwood, Scott Jones, Amy Dawson, Amy Louise, Stuart McNaught, Stephen Aston, M. Evans Roberts, Caroline Robertson, Kate Puttack, Louis Cook, Martina McManus, Carl Pendlebury, Danny Eaton, James McNaught, Jenny Munster, Kelly Cannon, Jason Heredia, Emily Perry, John and Emma. Congratulations, they've recently got engaged. Thank you very much, Craig Harris, Kalila Keane, Ollie Amesbury, Adam Parslow, Josh. Poo jokes aren't my favourite type of jokes, but they're definitely number two, Chris. Thank you very much. Alice Wood, Rhys Bowden, Kate Stevenson, Kyle David-Smith, and Connor Lewins.
Woo! We love every single person in our Patreon community. Thank you for keep making this thing happen every week. And we appreciate anyone listening this far and just checking us out and supporting us. It means the absolute world. And of course, we'll be back next Friday and every week with some very special guests and some laughs to keep you entertained. I was going to try and make some jokes about Iron Brew, haggis,
racism,
and racist. Groundskeeper Willie from
I'm
The
pro
Simpsons.
Scotland. I'm pro Scotland. Hi, this is the voice of Sean Smith. I am pro Scottish, despite what you might have just heard from Morgan Richards.
Pro Scotch.
Pro. Oh wow, they ate that as well. Anyway. Thank you very much to everybody in our Patreon. This definitely wouldn't be possible without those guys. So thank you very much, guys and girls and gender progressives. Thank you very much. Fucking Sapnin!
Sapnin!
That better have recorded this time.
You're listening to Sapnin Podcast with Sean Smith and Morgan Richards. Thank you very much for downloading this podcast or streaming it, or I don't know what else you do with podcasts. Thank you very much.